and welcome to a new edition of Mercenary Musings Radio featuring mining analyst and commodities expert, the mercenary geologist Mickey Fulp. We are your most trusted source for in-depth analysis and commentary on commodities, mining, and the junior resource sector. And joining us from Mercenary Musings World Headquarters in Albuquerque, New Mexico, the mercenary geologist himself, Mickey Fulp. Mickey, how are you?
I'm well. I always get a chuckle, World Headquarters, and I do have a pretty nice office, but it hardly qualifies as as a world's headquarters, I suppose.
There's only one mercenary geologist who I know, Mickey, and you are based in Albuquerque, so as far as I'm concerned, that is World HQ for you. For this edition of the program, Mickey, we're taking a look at metals and minerals from the, I guess you could say, the opposite position that the United States finds itself in concerning energy, because we have the Energy Information Agency saying that within about 4 years or so, the United States will become a net exporter of energy. When it comes to industrial metals, minerals, and materials, though, the U.S. heavily depended on imported supplies. You've done exhaustive research on this topic, Mickey. What's the bottom line here? Because you do find this quite troubling.
Well, I think the real bottom line, Rob, would be that of a total of 97 metals, minerals, and materials that the USGS tracks on a yearly basis, our net import reliance is for 21 of those is 100%. For 29 of those, it's greater than 50%. For 14, it's greater than 25%. Mm-hmm. There's another 17 that we are less than 25% import reliant, and we actually export 16. So you add all that up, 64 out of 97, we're dependent on foreign countries for at least 25% of our supply.
And all this, Mickey, really, we've got to roll the clock back to, what, the early 1900s, don't we, to see how this whole ball got going here, because around the time of World War One, that's when the need to stockpile critical metals really came to the forefront in the United States. So give us a bit of a history lesson here. How did it progress from there?
Well, as you say, we first realized it in the little more than a year we were involved in World War One, and there was a movement amongst Congress and the executive branch to do something about it. And of course, they procrastinated and they didn't do anything about it until 1938 and 39, when Hitler was rattling cages in Europe, and the same thing was happening with the emperor in Japan. So Congress appropriated $100 million at that time to stockpile critical materials. But the time World War II started, they'd only spent $54 million of that.
And I guess, Mickey, after World War II, it was the importance of stockpiling that really hit home in the United States. And by the beginning of the Korean War, those stockpiles had really mushroomed considerably, hadn't they?
Well, that's true, Rob. And during World War II, the U.S. mobilized all its manufacturing and industrial base, and they imported massive quantities of things that we were dependent on, ferroalloys, manganese, even things like tin and natural rubber and vegetable tannins to make leather, et cetera. By the end of the war, there were 15 materials, but after the war, they passed this act called the Strategic and Critical Minerals Stockpiling Act of 1946. Mm-hmm. And by the beginning of the Korean War in 1952, stockpiles consisted of 75 different commodities with a value that grew as high as $10.4 billion. Right. In 1956.
And after that, though, things kind of went south, didn't they?
Well, they did, yeah. And what happened, you know, the military has these war colleges, and I actually know a guy who spent his entire career, or most of it, in the war college, and it's a bunch of people playing games on war scenarios. So what they did in 1958 was they started planning for short nuclear wars versus longer-lived conventional wars, and all this, and they cut the requirement from 5 years to 3 years of supply. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden by 1962, there was 63 of these 75 stockpiled materials were in excess. Mm-hmm. And so they started selling them off.
And the thinking being, Mickey, that if there's a nuclear war, will last a lot less time than a conventional war, so you will need fewer of these metals, right?
Right. And then also what happened at that time, there were some worldwide shortages in base metals in 1965, and the inventory. So they sold a bunch of stuff like antimony and copper and lead and zinc and cadmium, et cetera, to support domestic industries. And by 1965, the inventory was down to $1.6 billion. Mm. So they further reduced it to a one-year supply in 1970 as all the federal budget deficits started hitting from Johnson's war on poverty and the Vietnam War. Mm-hmm. And it just goes on and on. They reestablished a three-year goal by an act of Congress in 1979.
And I don't know, Mickey, reading through your report, I get the feeling, too, that governments also looked at these stockpiles as an easy cash grab when they were short on funds, whether to either pay for campaign promises, reduce the deficit. This stuff was just sitting there, so it was an easy way to get some money quickly, right?
Right, and that's really been what's happened, especially by 1988, they transferred the management of the stockpile from FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, which screws up giving relief to all our big natural disasters. They transferred it to the Department of Defense. And so all of a sudden, especially with the collapse of communism in the Soviet Union by 1991, they decide we didn't need any of this stuff anymore. So during the Clinton and Bush Jr. administrations, they basically sold the whole thing off again.
And the situation today, Mickey, you describe as being something that we should be very concerned about. It's more about where the materials and the metals are coming from. It's not so much the fact that you have to go and get them. It's the fact that there are certain countries out there that you would rather not do a lot of business with if you don't have to.
Well, this is very true, Rob, and this is really my main concern. Now, the stockpile has been built up again over the last, 4 or 5 years. Mm-hmm. Now has a value of about $1.2 billion. But that's down from $8.9 billion in 1994. But if you look at who we're dependent on for these things, China, mm-hmm. We are dependent on 31 mineral commodities. Now, most of those are actually strategic metals or let me put it this way, metals that would be specialty metals.
Right.
With not a lot of demand, but 31 were dependent on China as the first, second, or third largest supplier, of which we only stockpile 7. Mm-hmm. Of the 9 that we are dependent on Russia, using the same criteria, 3 are stockpiled. Mm. But get this, we're selling one of those from the stockpile. Mm-hmm. And then we've got 10 that we are strongly dependent on South Africa, and we stockpile 4, and 2 of those are presently selling out of the stockpile. So really what's going on is it's a manipulation by the Department of Defense. In the 90s and early 2000s, they were using all these stockpiles to fund things like military benefits and war monument memorials, mm-hmm. and Oh, geez, I'm trying to remember some of the other things they were doing. Minting of silver coins, commemorative silver coins, and they were also transferring money to the general fund to pay off some of the deficit.
Right.
So once again, you've got a bunch of gamers playing war scenarios, deciding what America needs and what America does not need.
Very short-term thinking.
Yeah, very short-term thinking, and it's geared only to those industries that are dependent for the military or those industries that supply the military.
Right.
So, you know, for instance, right now we're selling our stockpile of manganese and our stockpiles of chrome, and where are those sourced? Southern Africa, Russia, Kazakhstan, Georgia, the Republic of Georgia, so you look at it, we're dependent on China, Russia and its former Soviet satellites, a bunch of unstable countries, and something that I think will be unstable for your lifetime and mine, and that's Southern Africa,
right,
and a few select third world countries and other parts of the world, which such as the Philippines or Mozambique. Well, that's Southern Africa, but places that you don't have warm and fuzzy feelings about for anybody in North America. Now, that said, we import something on the order of 14 of these metals and materials from Canada, and you're our good friends, despite the fact that
you're going to rattle on now about our quote socialist government. But go ahead.
But, well, I've looked at the latest numbers, and it looks like you're most likely to reelect a conservative in the next election. Trudeau is not extremely popular at this point. So,
well, I'm not going to make any political commentary here. But the fact of the matter is, too, Mickey, is that, I mean, you know, geology, sometimes you got to buy from customers you'd rather not buy from, because that's just the way the world is made, right? I mean, there's no other source.
Well, absolutely. And that's, there's two things we cannot change about mineral deposits. And the first one is the geology, and the second one is the geographic location.
Right.
So we will never find enough manganese or enough chromium in North America, and that includes our friends, the Canadians, to supply demand in North America. So we're dependent on these countries. But the short-sightedness here comes from the fact that we don't stockpile those, and we're actually selling the stockpiles of those.
Right.
But this isn't a new phenomena regarding the geology and geography and what we're dependent on. You know, I've gone back. The USGS has been doing this since 1998. Before that, the U.S. Bureau of Mines was the one that produced the annual report on U.S. net import reliance. Mm-hmm. But if I go back to 10-year intervals, which I've done, 1997, 19 of the current 21, we were 100% dependent on. So it hasn't changed very much. And the two that have left that or have been added to that list, we were almost completely dependent in 2007. Mm-hmm. You go back to 1997, and all the ones on the 1997 list reappear in the 2017 list. So your point's very well taken there, that you can't change the geology, you can't change the geography, so we will be dependent. I think really what's changed over, say, the last 10 years is our relationship with China, and that brings us right back to what Trump's trying to do with the trade tariffs right now. You notice since the last time we talked, the great worry was steel and aluminum, and our friends, the Canadians, and our friends, the Mexicans, and every other part of the Western industrial world. Now they've all been excluded from these tariffs. And what it's really come down to, it's the U.S. trying to put pressure on China right. for some of these things like rare earth elements that we are 100% dependent on China for.
Right. Okay. But you mentioned that you can't change the geology, but you also said that you can change regulation in Washington. And wrapping up, Mickey, that's one area where you see a little bit of hope right now in terms of your U.S. president rolling back regulations and whatnot in the United States. Could that play a beneficial role in this whole story about the U.S. having to be so reliant on a number of countries for various minerals?
Well, to some degree it can, but I think more than anything, it's the hope that this rollback of regulations will stimulate the mineral industry. You know, like I say, we're never going to find a significant chromium resource in the U.S. We're not going to ever find any significant manganese resources in the U.S. because we don't have the proper geology. Mm-hmm. But we are next net exporters of molybdenum. We have major copper mines that are waiting to be developed. We have newly discovered lead and zinc deposits on the horizon that are waiting financing and development. You know, we're 85% dependent on zinc. Now, it's mainly from Canada, Mexico, and Peru, very America-centric. But the hope would be that some of these things that we have really good deposits, we can start exporting some of those and help with this balance of payments deficit that we have in our trade balance.
Okay, well, that's a good way to wrap this one up. Mickey, thanks very much for this. We appreciate it. We'll reconnect in about a month's time.
All right. Thanks a lot, Rob.
That's Mickey Fulp, the mercenary geologist. You can find him on the web at mercenarygeologist.com. I'm Robert Graham at Mercenary Musings Radio. Thanks for listening.